John, the first chapter, in the 43rd verse. And it goes as follows. The next day, Jesus decided to go to Galilee. He found Philip and said to him, "Follow me." Now, Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. Philip found Nathanael and said to him, "We have found him about whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus, son of Joseph from Nazareth." Nathanael said to him, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" Philip said to him, "Come and see." When Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him, he said of him, "Here is truly an Israelite in whom there is no deceit." Nathanael asked him, "Where did you get to know me?" Jesus answered, "I saw you under the fig tree before Philip called you." Nathanael replied, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Jesus answered, "Do you believe because I told you that I saw you under the fig tree? You will see greater things than these." And he said to him, "Very truly I tell you, you will see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man." The word of God for the people of God. I was in the theater at Spelman College, which is literally across the street from my alma mater, and the alma mater of a man named Michael King, called Martin King. At Morehouse, he was called Tweety because he wore sharp tweed suits all the time. Tweety, who would go on to become known as the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Please don't forget the Reverend. About 500 feet from the chapel that is named after him is the theater that I was in, spring of 2002, listening to a lecture from one of my favorite directors of all time, one of my favorite people of all time, and a Morehouse man, the incomparable Spike Lee. This day, I will never forget now, because when he finished talking and the Q&A period began, I was the first person in line. And I got in line, and I brought my VHS copy of She's Gotta Have It. And the first thing I said was, "Can you sign this for me?" And he did. And after he did, every other person in the theater wanted him to sign something or read a screenplay or, "Can you cast me in a movie because I'm an actor?" And midway through all of this, about 50 people in, he stopped and looked at me in the back of the theater and said, "You did this." He was so mad. He was so mad. I had moments like this constantly at Morehouse, constantly in college. This just happens all the time. Another reason I'll never forget that day is it's the first time I ever heard about the magical Negro. Say that, magical Negro. Now that sounds offensive. White folks didn't even want to say that, really. It was like, magical African American. No, magical Negro. Now, I know that sounds offensive. I don't want you to get mad yet. I want you to hear what it is, then I want you to get mad. The magical Negro is a trope in literature, TV, or film, and there's a character in these situations, and their sole purpose, we're not going to learn anything about them, they're not going to grow or develop at all. The only reason they exist is to help the central white character. They are usually slaves or working class people, and at any rate, they are notched down from the person that they are helping, and as TVTropes.com says, they usually exist in order to show that minority characters are not bad people. That's their purpose. So think Hattie McDaniel in Gone with the Wind as Mammy, right? Even as a slave, she has this magical wisdom that can set Scarlett straight. She can't do nothing for herself, but she can help Scarlett out. Think Uncle Remus in Song of the South. Think the bartender, Dick Halloran in The Shining. Think Whoopi Goldberg in Ghost. Think Morgan Freeman. Now, Morgan Freeman has done this a few times now, but think about him in The Shawshank Redemption. Key and Peele even did a skit called Magic Negro, on their comedy show, Magic Negroes, y'all. Spike was railing against this use of blackness in 1999 after that year gave us the Green Mile. Now, John Coffey, that big, strong black man, cures a prison guard simply by touching him. Or the legend of Bagger Vance in the year 2000, where Will Smith is this all-knowing caddy. Spike said, blacks are out here getting lynched left and right, and all Bagger Vance cares about is helping out Matt Damon's golf swing. The magic Negro, the noble savage, the happy slave. It's the use of black people in a way that only helps white people, because that's what we do, right? We serve. It's a neat little trick, too, because it is a black character, right? We need more black characters. Oscar's so white, right? And we want more black characters. We applaud that. But when it happens in a way that is subservient to another white character, no matter how well-intended, it can further play into negative stereotypes. You there, but you ain't helping nothing. In other words, a good liberal media can reinforce racism. Even the movie that I think is going to win Best Picture this year, you should see it, The Shape of Water, incredible movie, features the wonderful, super talented Octavia Butler from Hidden Figures in The Help as a maid helping her friend, who is still another maid, but her character doesn't get to grow. She exists as another set of hands in the movie. I love that movie. And listen, we can't develop everybody's character, right? I get that. But what does that say about black women? Just think about it. And what happens when this is not only on TV, books, or film, but what happens when it happens in real life? What happens when we do this to real black people? Follow me, y'all. When a person becomes the black friend in your group, who gets to be sassy and set everybody straight when it's time to set everybody straight. I've been that black friend before. What happens when, in an effort to give people their humanity, we assign so much to their humanity, we give them so much acclaim that they move from being less than human to being more than human, that they become superhuman? What happens when someone gives a powerful speech with biting truth and undeniable power, a thing that needs to be heard, and our response is, she needs to be president? What happens when we take a real moment for women's rights? Sunday was a real moment for women's rights, and turn it into a coronation, or worse, a joke. Oprah, by no fault of her own, has been turned into a magical Negro. She's so powerful, she's no longer woman. She's no longer even black. Oprah is Oprah. Barack Obama is Barack Obama. Jay-Z is Jay-Z. They exist over there and way up there, so far away that we admire them, but how could we ever duplicate them? In a system that propagates the evil of racism and inequality, that reinforces our otherness and our second-class citizenship, those are supposed to be our heroes, but no, their portrait of black excellence is shown to us as an anomaly. Hey, y'all, that was a mistake. We don't say, this is possible for you. No, we look at them as even greater because, you know what, this is impossible to do. That's what makes Oprah, Oprah. That's why she should run for president. Look how magical she is. And of course it's possible. Of course it is possible to reach those heights and the heights of many other people. All the examples I have named have said it is possible themselves over and over again. But when their narratives are taken over by white media, no matter how many times Oprah names her ancestors and talks about her difficult upbringing in Mississippi with unmarried, separated parents, and then moving to Milwaukee and then moving to Nashville and living in poverty throughout and being a survivor of sexual abuse, her life is important for young black girls on the South Side. Not only her billions, but her life, her story. Those are gems for a weary soul. But that's not what we talk about when we talk about Oprah, is it? Oprah's Oprah. She got a TV show. Look how much money she got. Dag! I want our black actors on TV and in society to be accessible to our children. I want my people to grow up and not see them as way up there and way over there. Remember that one time something good happened? I want them to see that they are where we came from. They're not magic. They worked hard. They're not magic. They found good community. It's not magic, y'all. It's resilience and faith and focus. It's not magic. This is the essence of the Black Girl Magic movement, right? That's exactly what they mean. But when some people see magic, they say, see, magic isn't real. Magic means not real. No, this is real. This is real. We must remember in our project of recovering humanity, black and white, and the rest, of giving humanity back to people, that dehumanization works two ways. It denies humanity, but also if Oprah becomes so great that she is something more than human, that's just as useless as making her a slave in the cause of justice. A conversation and class about white privilege is coming in February. I won't lead it. I won't be there. But what every white person needs to know is that we don't want to become superhuman. What we want is the same chance to succeed and make mistakes that you have. It is the core of the evil of the immigration system. Now, if undocumented folks are not able to be perfect, then they can't stay here. If you aren't superhuman, then that gives us the right to treat you less than human. No, all we want is our humanity. This overcorrecting we're doing. And the challenge in all of this, God help us, is whether on TV or in the scripture or in the life of Reverend King, it will be all the people with the best intentions who will make this mistake the most often. No, black people aren't three-fifths of a human. They're magic. You give us magic status. I believe the only reason the Roman Catholic Church could exist in the shadow of Jesus was to strip him of his Jewishness and focus on his divinity. Jesus became the first magical Jew, y'all. Family of God, the people King was most afraid of were not them rednecks who were riding on the backs of trucks, y'all. I hate to break it to you today. It was not the blatantly bigoted Bull Connor. I mean, he didn't like him, but it also wasn't them tiki torch holding folks in Charlottesville. No, they were not the biggest problem. In his letter from a Birmingham jail, the most important document of the 20th century, you better make sure you don't get to Tuesday morning and haven't read a letter from a Birmingham jail again. It is widely quoted all over in little small pieces, but seldom is it read in full. It isn't them folks at all he addresses. He don't want to talk to Trump. He don't want to talk to Charlottesville. He don't want to talk to Breitbart or Fox News. First, he says, first, I must confess that over the last few years, I have been gravely disappointed with the white moderate. I have almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in the stride toward freedom is not the White Citizens Council or the Ku Klux Klanner, but the white moderate who is devoted more to order than to justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice. Shallow understanding from people of goodwill is more frustrating than absolute misunderstanding from people of ill will. Oof. I don't know what it would be like to be white and hear those words right now. I don't. And our response, because of course it was our response, was to turn MLK into the most magical Negro this country has ever seen. To go about quoting but not wrestling as he wrestled. To invoke the phrase beloved community, but not to embody it. To make a day out of an idea. To do community service, but not community engagement. To turn a life into a fable so much that when any slice of his humanity comes up and people want to talk about mistakes he made and flaws he had, no, King made a mistake, no! Jesus comes from a place where nothing is expected of him. So when Philip comes to Nathanael and says, look, he's here. He's here, Nate. He's the one. Nathanael presupposes the less than human mentality that his own people had subjected against them. He takes that up for himself. Can anything good come out of Nazareth? What you mean he's the one? He from Nazareth, right? Look how we take on the thoughts of our oppressors and make them our own. And when Jesus says to Nathanael, I know you, Nathanael then gives him magic status. And Jesus says, all you see is that little trick with me seeing you from a long ways away under a fig tree. That's why you believe? That is why you believe? That little magic trick right there? And then the next part is important. You will see greater things than these. Very truly, I tell you, you will see the heavens opened up and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. But he doesn't say when. In other words, Jesus doesn't say that he's the one who's going to do these things. He's saying that these are the things that are going to happen. But he doesn't say that he will do greater. In fact, later he clarifies it with his disciples and tells them they are going to be the ones who do greater than him. When Jesus says to Philip, follow me, he isn't saying stand behind me and watch me do miracles. No, he's saying do miracles like me. He's saying do miracles with me. Follow me, Philip. Follow me. Don't follow me. Follow me. Don't idolize me. The people were saying, Jesus, you're so great, you're so awesome. And he says, only God in heaven is great. He kept saying this. He performed miracles and he would tell his disciples, don't tell anybody what I just did. And his point is, because when they see this, they will think I am nothing but magic. When we see nothing but the magic, we miss the opportunity to see ourselves in him. Then Jesus just becomes this thing we can hope for one day. But we ain't good enough not to follow Jesus. We miss an opportunity to see him in us. And then when Jesus says, go and do likewise, we just stare at him. But Jesus meant it. The Messiah, the Son of God, meant it. You see all this loving I'm giving? Go and do likewise. You see all these people I'm helping and feeding? Go and do likewise. You see all this real tension that I am enduring in the name of justice? Go and do likewise. We need to stop idolizing Jesus and start following in his footsteps. We need to stop quoting his words and start living them. Think about what it would mean to live the gospel, y'all. Maybe it's not that King did something magical, but that he took seriously the call to imitate Christ. And his life was the result. What if we took seriously the call to imitate Christ, to follow him, to come after him, to work with him, to continue his work of loving the poor, of blessing children, of being in community with the oppressed? What if we took seriously the call to love and feed one another, to experience life together, instead of thinking that each of us exists on this earth to get what we can get and then pass it to our kids and leave? What if we started thinking about life together? What if we went to the day before the assassination and asked about the progress of the Poor People's Campaign since that day? What has happened since April 3rd, 1968, to the Poor People's Campaign? What would it mean to continue that work of standing with garbage workers who nobody cares about, or kids in public education who nobody cares about? What about the thousands of employees suddenly without jobs now because 63 Sam's Clubs decided they were just going to downsize and people came to work and realized you don't have a job anymore? What about the people in Woodlawn and Jackson Park and South Shore? What should we do when the displacement begins? These are questions to ask and to give them our voice. What would it mean to love those who are left on the cutting room floor of economic development? Even if you love the person who's doing it, What would it mean to be church? Church? The same three evils that King named, racism, militarism, capitalism, are still here. They're stronger than ever, ain't they? They are still on the pathway up to the mountaintop. And Dr. King, now listen, after you left, we saw a fourth body that was hanging around up there next to racism and militarism and capitalism. Sexism is up there too. You didn't notice it. A lot of those black leaders didn't notice it back then. I think I see the wings of ableism up there as well, and the tail of heterosexism. I see transphobia up there as well. And we must never be content to see them, to point them out, to write statuses about them, to share articles about them. Every ism is a life affected, a community ravaged, a child of God denied. King said, I have seen the mountaintop. And now we must climb. We must climb to it. We must honor and finish with King and Bayard Rustin and Ella Baker and Fannie Lou Hamer and Oscar and Dorothy and Ralph and thousands of others unnamed. We must put our feet on the land that they could only see. For our children. And that generations ahead may remember a time when justice was but a dream. Deny the seduction to make our heroes more than humans. Deny the temptation to turn the black people in your lives into magicians. Deny the urge to idolize. We are here to follow up. Use this silence to hear what the Spirit is still saying. To find your place on the mountain.